Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1103, Fascism, 2019 World Tour Part 13, Goose Hopping in Hong Kong with Pepe the Frog and the Azov Battalion. This is being recorded on December 10th of the year 2019. The title of this series that I'm doing, Fascism 2019 World Tour, is assuming something of a life of its own, as indeed some of the manifestations of global fascism that I have been covering are indeed on tour. And the long series that I did on the Intermarium concept and the Intermarium continuity, looking at Ukraine as what Halford Mackinder and later Zbigniew Brzezinski termed the pivot point, an area that was crucial for control of not only Europe, but the world island or Earth Island and Eurasia, the world island or Earth Island, that stretch of land from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe and Asia, much of the Middle East. It comprises most of the world's landmass and most of the world's natural resources and most of the world's population. And geopoliticians have long seen control of that as the key to world domination. Ukraine, with its geopolitical position on the eastern flank of Europe and the western flank of Russia and Eurasia, and something of a gateway to India and China, is seen as a pivot point. Ukraine also has a tremendous allocation, I guess one say it could say, of arable land. It has some of the best arable land in the world and also has the largest proven natural gas reserves in Europe. In that long paper that we accessed from Covert Action magazine by Marlene Lacourelle and Ellen Rivera, one of the manifestations of the Intermarium continuity was a Central European energy consortium. And that, I think, looms large not only in the context of Ukraine as a pivot point, but in some of the maneuverings that we're seeing around the circus in Washington, where the Trump administration has been trying to portray Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden as somehow corrupt. Hunter Biden is certainly opportunistic in a way that a great many political figures on both sides of the aisle, including and especially Team Trump, have been. But Hunter Biden's position on the board of directors of Burisma, the Ukrainian natural gas firm, is resonant directly with the concept of the Intermarium and the Central and Eastern European energy interests in particular. Front and center in the Intermarium concept has been the OUNB, the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, and the Azov Battalion. The Azov Battalion has been the sponsor of the Intermarium Support Group and constitutes something of a, I wouldn't say necessarily an endpoint, but a derivative of the Ukrainian fascist evolution that took place from the end of World War One all the way on up through the period between the World Wars, through the Cold War, and on up into the Cold War period. Roman Zvarich, one of the key spokespersons for the Azov Battalion and someone who recruited for it through his non-governmental organization, was the secretary to Yaroslav Stetsko in the early 1980s and a key member of the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. The ABN was dominated by the OUNB and also the UPA, the military wing of the OUNB. Again, this covered great length in many shows, including the long series, for the record, shows 1,098 through 1,101. We came back to that in, for the record, 1,102 as well. The Fascism 2019 World Tour series included some discussion of what has been going on in Hong Kong and China as well. You know, when you've been around this line of inquiry for a while, it gets to a point where you can kind of, you can connect the dots awfully quickly, and you don't even need to see all the dots before you can connect them. When I noted that the Hong Kong demonstrators had adopted Pepe the Frog, the iconic mascot, to coin a term, of the alt-right, and that Steve Bannon was coordinating the anti-China efforts, incorporating American and European Cold War hardliners, the fascist mind control Falun Gong, Islamic fundamentalists of the Uyghur variety, and others, it really should come as no surprise to see Pepe the Frog in Hong Kong. You got Steve Bannon coordinating the anti-China effort, and sure enough, Pepe the Frog turns up in Hong Kong. I said to myself, okay, I got it. We're going to come back to Steve Bannon and reflect on his activities with Cambridge Analytica, the links between the WikiLeaks operation and Ed Snowden. Recall that his first stop on Snowden's ride, as I called it, was in Hong Kong, and that his flight from Hawaii to Hong Kong was assisted by Jacob Applebaum, financed through the Broadcasting Board of Governors, read CIA, and joined at the hip with Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. Then after Hong Kong, A.B. Snowden, courtesy of Sarah Harrison of WikiLeaks, and an aircraft provided by WikiLeaks, jets to Moscow. The reboot with Russia that had been undertaken by Barack Obama. And remember that Hillary Clinton's State Department, seems like a long time ago, that came to an end. We're going to speculate about what has been going on in Hong Kong, what Steve Bannon may have been doing perhaps with SCL or other interests. We're going to take a look at a Chinese link, Chinese, quote, dissident, unquote, link to the genesis of WikiLeaks. And we're going to tie this in with the latest group of people to hook up with what is, frankly, ironically being called the pro-democracy movement in Hong Kong, that has succeeded in sending the Hong Kong economy into recession. It is now in the Hong Kong economy is now in very bad shape. And remember, this began with protests over an extradition law where a guy who was resident in Hong Kong murdered his pregnant girlfriend and then fled to, he was present, I should say, in Taiwan. He murdered his pregnant girlfriend, and then split for Hong Kong because it didn't have an extradition treaty. And that was one of the things that helped to spur the extradition treaty, and that cued what we are being told is the pro-democracy movement in Hong Kong. Spoken about Hong Kong in the past, I note that the hashtag MeToo crowd seems to have missed that one. Murdering one's pregnant girlfriend is not the most feminist-friendly sort of activity. One might think that they would have taken an interest in that if they had been sincere, but I've felt for a long time that the whole hashtag MeToo phenomenon is a psyop. More perhaps about that in later shows. I've speculated about that and weaponized feminism in For the Record program number 998, among others. Well, the latest element to turn up in Hong Kong with the, quote, pro-democracy protesters, unquote, as none other than elements of, drumroll, trumpets sounding, the Azov Battalion and people from private sector as well. That might seem unusual, but I think in terms of contemplating Ukraine as a pivot point and as an area that is viewed as key to not only Europe and Russia, but also to Eurasia as well, with China undertaking its Belt and Road Initiative, in which its considerable high-speed rail infrastructure is going to be expanded and used to help to communicate with and to affect transportation interface with much of Eurasia. I think that the position of Ukraine as a pivot point becomes even more significant. Note in the article that is to follow how the elements from Pravi Sector and from the Azov Battalion are specifically in Hong Kong with press credentials. These are not journalists. They also are there courtesy of an EU-financed NGO. It's called the Liberal Democratic League of Ukraine, and it is part of the European Liberal Youth and International Federation of Liberal Youth. Again, these are all EU NGOs. So the Kiev-based Free Hong Kong Center is a project of these EU-linked non-governmental organizations, and these Ukrainian Nazis from Azov Battalion and from Pravi Sector, they have combined in an association they call GONOR, capital G-O-N-O-R. They are in Hong Kong and networking with the activists there as part of an EU, quote, soft power, unquote, overt, covert operation. I don't think that it is a reach at all to see this as another iteration of the Maidan coup phenomenon, and indeed these elements have been quite explicit about not only their role in the Maidan coup, but how they see what they are going to do or what they are attempting to do in Hong Kong as an extension of that. I would note also that these Ukrainian Nazis are combat veterans. They, in various social media posts, have been quite high profile about appearing with arms. They also are heavily resonant with and networked with international fascist elements, including elements of the American Nazi terror group, the Order, from the 1980s, including the late David Lane, who drove the getaway car in the assassination of Denver talk show host Alan Berg, and who then has become something of a Nazi and Odinist ideological luminary with various writings, including a volume called Victory or Valhalla. Several of the Nazis present in Hong Kong, veterans again of Azov Battalion and Pravi Sector, had tattoos saying Victory or Valhalla. The youth cadre or the military cadre of Svoboda, one of the OUNB's successor organizations in Ukraine, is named after the 14 words that were minted by David Lane. So, again, note the EU NGO sponsorship of the Azov Battalion and Pravi Sector veteran Nazis in Hong Kong. And note their armed presence and the fact that one of them has used his Telegram channel to communicate images from the Hong Kong clashes of the Hong Kong protesters. Really, protesters is the wrong word. They have become combatants to a large extent, firing arrows and launching gasoline bombs and so forth. There is a lot to talk about, and we're going to get to this. We're going to take a look, too, at elements of commonality between what we are looking at now in Hong Kong and a recent coup in Bolivia, which not only appears to have been targeted to an extent on the lithium industry in Bolivia, but which also once again shows us or demonstrates the use of various fascist institutions and individuals as vehicles for not only covert operation initially, but ultimately for overt fascist coups in various parts of the world. We're going to look, too, at China's role as a green power, so to speak, how upsetting that has become to some people. And we're going to take a look at the now interdicted Chinese role in Bolivia in helping to develop their lithium industry for batteries. That is something we will probably get into in our next show. But once again, there is a Chinese link to the lithium coup in Bolivia, and we will talk about that either late in this show or probably in our next broadcast. Now, of the Azov Battalion and Province Sector in Hong Kong, again, goose hopping in Hong Kong with Pepe the Frog and Steve Bannon, we read the following. This is from the Gray Zone blog of December 4th of 2019. This is by Ben Norton, N-O-R-T-O-N. Ukrainian neo-Nazis flock to the Hong Kong protest movement. Subtitled, Neo-Nazis from Ukraine have flown to Hong Kong to participate in the anti-Chinese insurgency, which has been widely praised by Western corporate media and portrayed as a peaceful pro-democracy movement. Since March of 2019, Hong Kong has been the site of often violent protests and riots that have run the city's economy into the ground. The U.S. government has funded many of the groups leading the pro-Western and anti-Beijing movement, and opposition leaders have coordinated closely with conservative political figures in Washington, like Marco Rubio and Steve Bannon, lobbying for sanctions and other punitive measures against China. Numerous delegations of far-right groups from across the world have traveled to Hong Kong to join the violent insurgency against Beijing, in which secessionists have attacked police with bows and arrows, shot gasoline bombs out of catapults, and burned numerous people alive. With their flamboyant waving of U.S. and British colonial flags and tendency to belt out the American national anthem on megaphones, anti-China separatists in Hong Kong have made themselves a magnet for the U.S. far right. Staff of the website InfoWars, right-wing social media personality Paul Joseph Watson, and the ultra-conservative group Patriot Prayer are among those who have made pilgrimages to the protests. The latest collection of extreme right activists to reinforce the ranks of the Hong Kong separatists are from Ukraine. They call themselves Gonor, G-O-N-O-R, and have tattoos on their upper torsos with undeniable symbols of white supremacy and neo-Nazism. These extremists previously fought in a notoriously brutal neo-Nazi militia called the Azov Battalion in Ukraine's war against pro-Russian militants. The Azov Battalion is an explicitly fascist paramilitary group that originates, that organizes, excuse me, around neo-Nazi ideology. After a Western-backed 2014 coup against Ukraine's democratically elected government, Azov was incorporated into the Ukrainian National Guard. It has received support from the U.S. government, which has armed and advised the neo-Nazis in their fight against Moscow. Azov has also helped train American white supremacists who have plotted terrorist attacks back at home in the U.S. The presence of Ukrainian regime change activists in the Hong Kong protests is further evidence of the alliances that anti-Chinese activists in Hong Kong are building with other right-wing U.S.-backed movements around the world, sharing tactics to weaken and destabilize countries targeted by NATO. On December 1st, the far-right activist Sergei Filimonov, F-I-L-I-M-O-N-O-V, posted photos on Facebook showing himself and three Ukrainian friends upon their arrival in Hong Kong. The images were accompanied by the anti-Beijing's unofficial slogan, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." Stand with Hong Kong is also the name of a Western-backed organization that has been lobbying the governments of the U.S., Britain, Germany, Canada, and Australia to impose sanctions and take punitive action against China. In the video they posted on social media, the Ukrainian white supremacists revealed that they had obtained a press pass, misleadingly portraying themselves as journalists. Last couple of sentences again, because it is key. Of the images of Sergei Filimonov, the images were accompanied by the anti-Beijing's unofficial slogan, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." Stand with Hong Kong is also the name of a Western-backed organization that has been lobbying the governments of the U.S., Britain, Germany, Canada, and Australia to impose sanctions and take punitive action against China. In the video they posted on social media, the Ukrainian white supremacists revealed that they had obtained a press pass, misleadingly portraying themselves as journalists. Point being here, their presence in Hong Kong appears to be a derivative of covert operations. Continuing. Joining Filimonov on the trip to Hong Kong was a notorious extreme-right Ukrainian activist who goes by the name Maliar, M-A-L-I-A-R. Maliar is popular on Instagram under the name Godzilix, X-G-A-D-Z-I-L-L-A-X, where he has more than 23,000 followers. Maliar has a distinctive scar on the left side of the neck, which makes him easy to recognize in photos. Besides the swastikas inked into his skull, Maliar had the Nazi symbols tattooed on his right leg, next to an A-L-G-I-Z rune, another common white supremacist emblem. That's Algiz, A-L-G-I-Z rune, another white supremacist emblem. Several photos show that at least two of the Ukrainian fascists in Hong Kong have tattoos reading "Victory" or "Valhalla," unquote, the title of a compilation of writings by the notorious white American white supremacist David Lane, whose neo-fascist terrorist group The Order murdered a liberal Jewish radio host and planned more assassinations of left-wing Jews. Lane, who was sentenced to 190 years in a U.S. prison for various crimes, created the most famous white supremacist slogan, known as the 14 words, which inspired the name of another Ukrainian neo-Nazi group called C C-14. That, again, is the military cadre of Svoboda, and C-14 has not only received Ukrainian government funds, but along with the Azov Battalion's National Drezhina Militia, has been awarded police powers in a number of Ukrainian cities. Resuming. Filimonov, who also has a large following on Instagram, where he uses the name Sumperuna, S-U-M-P-E-R-U-N-A, published a photo showing the phrase Victory or Valhalla emblazoned on his chest. The book Victory or Valhalla is dedicated to Aryan kind, unquote. In its pages, its author says he is committed to preventing the, quote, imminent extinction of the white race, unquote, and the, quote, Judeo-American, Judeo-Christian murder of the white race, unquote. The screed is replete with homages to Nazis, and the back cover shows a photo of Lane's body in his coffin, wrapped in a Confederate flag. These Ukrainian fascists were such fans of the book that they permanently tattooed its title on their bodies. Maliar, the other member of Gomar who joined the Hong Kong protests, has Victory or Valhalla inscribed conspicuously on his neck. Journalist Morgan Artykhyuna, A-R-T-Y-K-H-I-N-A, A-R-T-Y-U-K-H-I-N-A, identified another member of the far-right Ukrainian contingent in Hong Kong as Sergei Sermenko, S-T-E-R-M-E-N-K-O. Artykhyuna noted that Sermenko is a former leader of the Ukrainian fascist group Right Sector, which burned down a trade union building in Odessa during the 2014 coup, killing 42 people. Probably Sector also is a political front that evolved from the UNA-UNSO, which was the most recent iteration or concretization of the UPA, the combat wing of the OUNB. So with Pravi Sekhar, again, a political front that evolved from the UNA-UNSO organization, and with the Azov Battalion, which is manifesting the Intermarian Support Group, and that is the evolution, again, of the OUNB and the UPA, with people like Roman Svarich, Yaroslav Stetsko, and others in the Intermarium continuity that I spoke about in For the Record 998, or 1098 through 1101. We are seeing a direct manifestation of this World War II and pre-World War II era Ukrainian fascist organization alive with Western intel, including CIA and BND and MI6, manifesting in Hong Kong. More about this. On December 2nd, the Ukrainian fascist visitors posted photos of themselves on the campus of Hong Kong Polytechnic University, or PolyU, a site of violent protests. PolyU has been the crucial base of operation for the separatist uprising. A total of 3,989 petrol bombs, 1,339 pieces of explosives, and 601 bottles of corrosive liquid were recovered at the school as of December 2nd, according to reports. Sergei Filimonov, the first on the left in the photo above, and by the way, embedded in the article are links to the pictures of these various individuals, and I think it would be more than worthwhile for people to take the time when I publish the written description for this show to take a look at these pictures. One more time. Sergei Filimonov, the first on the left in the photo above, has faced legal troubles in the past, appearing in court for allegedly brawling with police. The photos Filimonov posts on social media make two things abundantly clear. He is a Nazi and wants as many people as possible to see him shirtless while bearing weapons. Other members of Gawmor have published photos on Instagram holding guns. A video posted on Instagram in 2015 shows Malyar and a friend in a white rebel Confederate flag t-shirt surrounded by guns and tasers. By the way, I would note in passing that Instagram, of course, is owned by Facebook. We talked about Facebook and their links to intelligence, to fascism in many shows. And we're going to come back to one of the most heinous manifestations of Facebook in connection with both fascism and the intelligence community, namely Cambridge Analytica, later on in this show. Back to Gawmor, again, the name that these Ukrainian Nazis have given themselves. Gawmor's symbol draws on many of the same far-right ultra-nationalist themes, with three white knives centered on a black flag. Gawmor's Telegram channel offers members a front seat to an orgy of violence. It has published dozens of videos of Hong Kong insurgents heroizing them for shooting arrows and carrying out brutal attacks on state security forces. Both Filimonov and Malyar previously fought in the U.S.-backed neo-Nazi Azov Battalion. Malyar has posted photos on Instagram showing the two armed and in military uniform wearing Azov patches. And Filimonov has published several showing him and his friends wearing Azov t-shirts. Despite all this publicity available evidence, despite all this publicly available evidence demonstrating the open fascism of the Ukrainian hooligans in Hong Kong, the Kiev-based Free Hong Kong Center published a statement on Facebook defending and whitewashing Gawmor. The organization confirmed that the extremists did indeed fight with Azov, quote, during the first period of the war, unquote, against pro-Russian separatists, but claimed they have been unaffiliated since 2015. The Free Hong Kong Center described the neo-fascists as, quote, activists of the Revolution of Dignity, that's the name they give the Maidanku, as well as veterans of the defending war with Russia, unquote. Absurdly, the center declared that they, quote, assured us they are really against Nazism and another kind of alt-right ideology. Quote, a lot of people were disappointed by the tattoos of these guys, unquote, the Free Hong Kong Center conceded, but they insisted, quote, that all symbols are from Slavic paganism, unquote. The Free Hong Kong Center is a project of an NGO called the Liberal Democratic League of Ukraine. This next few sentences are fundamental because, again, they demonstrate that the presence of these Azov / Pravi Sektor veterans, including a guy who was one of the leaders of Pravi Sektor, their presence comes courtesy of EU-backed NGOs, and their presence in Hong Kong can thus be seen as a manifestation of covert or paramilitary action. The Free Hong Kong Center is a project of an NGO called the Liberal Democratic League of Ukraine. In addition to building links of anti-Beijing forces in Hong Kong, the project says its mission is to, quote, counter Chinese threats to Ukraine, unquote. The Liberal Democratic League of Ukraine is a pro-European Union advocacy organization which is a member of the European Liberal Youth and the International Federation of Liberal Youth, both of which are funded by the EU. The main coordinator of the Free Hong Kong Center is a Ukrainian activist named Arthur Karitonov, K-H-A-R-Y-T-O-N-O-V, who is also the president of the Liberal Democratic League of Ukraine. Karitonov was deeply involved in the Euromaidan protests in Ukraine, which led to the 2014 U.S.-backed coup. He then set up the league in 2015. Karimov and his organization have been frequently amplified in U.S. government-funded Ukrainian media outlets such as Romovsky. In these softball interviews with a highly sympathetic press, Karimov likens the anti-Russia protests in Ukraine to the anti-China protests in Hong Kong and calls for closer bonds between them. Karimov and these Western-backed organizations are part of a growing network of Ukrainian regime change activists who are organizing with secessionists in Hong Kong, holding and sharing insurgency tactics. As the U.S. and NATO-led unipolar hegemonic order that has dominated the world since the end of the Cold War begins to crumble, and as a rising China and Russia seek to restore a multipolar global system, Washington and European nations are constructing a latticework of movements to undermine their adversaries on their frontiers. This global network is marketed as the advance of global liberalism, but as events from Ukraine to Hong Kong have revealed, fascism is festering at its base. And this last sentence, again, in many ways sums this up. This global network, after the last two sentences, as the U.S. and NATO-led unipolar hegemonic order that has dominated the world since the end of the Cold War begins to crumble, and as a rising China and Russia seek to restore a multipolar global system, Washington and European nations are constructing a latticework of movements to undermine their adversaries on their frontiers. This global network is marketed as the advance guard of global liberalism, but as events from Ukraine to Hong Kong have revealed, fascism is festering at its base. Well, indeed, again, noting that the activists in Ukraine, I can't call them pro-democracy protesters. Imagine in the U.S., I love the newspeak on something like this. Imagine if you had a political demonstration in the U.S. where there was the possibility of rioting or violence. So you've got SWAT teams or riot squad police deployed to maintain order. And someone throws a Molotov cocktail or more than one at those cops. What do you think those cops are going to do? I'm not a cop, obviously. If I had a gun and someone threw a Molotov cocktail at me, I'd shoot them. I'm sorry, I'm not a saint, and I'm just not that big on the idea of getting hit with a Molotov cocktail. So I think I'd probably pull down on them. But it's just amazing, they're throwing Molotov cocktails at cops and smashing subway stations and in some cases setting passersby on fire. Doesn't sound pro-democracy to me. There was at least one IED that was discovered. A subway train was derailed. If that was taking, imagine if Black Lives Matter demonstrators or Occupy Wall Street demonstrators were smashing subway stations or throwing Molotov cocktails at cops or setting people on fire with accelerants. Imagine how the police would react. Imagine how our media would portray them. They wouldn't be called pro-democracy protesters, not by a damn sight. But this is very much like the society George Orwell predicted, and said in a time of total deceit, telling the truth, or in an age, I think he said, in an age, maybe a time of total deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. Steve Bannon is coordinating the anti-China protests, or effort, I should say, operation. As we looked at in For the Record 1089, it should come as no surprise, I should say, to see Pepe the Frog adopted by the protesters. Wonder. Steve Bannon was, of course, one of the driving forces behind the Cambridge Analytica operation. When we come back to Facebook or Fastest Book, we're going to take a look at how Steve Bannon helped to target incels, people who are, the name comes from involuntary celibate. These are generally apparently pretty socially disturbed and consequently misogynistic men who basically haven't been getting any. And Steve Bannon was specifically targeting the incels with his Cambridge Analytica propaganda. With Steve Bannon coordinating the anti-China effort here, as we looked at in his revival of the Committee on the Present Danger, I don't think it is of all unfair. In fact, I think it's important to ask to what extent the protests in Hong Kong, which appeared to be at least to a considerable extent driven by mobile technology and social media, to what extent are we looking at sort of a Hong Kong Analytica operation? Recall that, as we will see, we're going to review shortly, at the core of Cambridge Analytica was a company that it basically was spun out of SCL Group, which is a British military contractor involved in operations PSYOPs in Afghanistan. Of course, Hong Kong used to be a British colony, and they have been flying the Union Jack as well as the Stars and Stripes at some of those demonstrations. I wonder to what extent Steve Bannon and the elements of the Cambridge Analytica milieu, or similar elements, SCL, Palantir, Facebook, certainly Instagram is a worldwide phenomenon, and the Azov Battalion and Pravi Sector veterans of Garner have been using Instagram to communicate their message. In an article used in past programs, for the record, 1077 among others. This is from the campaign blog by Kate McGee, M-A-G-E-E, from November 5th of 2018. Cambridge Analytica whistleblower Christopher Wiley. It's time to save creativity, unquote. Time to save a whole lot more than that. But some key aspects of the Cambridge Analytica operation. And I think, again, with Steve Bannon being at the core of the Cambridge Analytica PSYOP, and with Steve Bannon coordinating the anti-Beijing Hong Kong or anti-China operation, I think taking a look at Cambridge Analytica and asking ourselves to what extent the mobile technology and social media aspect of the Hong Kong disturbances are being driven by somebody or something like Cambridge Analytica, SCL, Steve Bannon et al. Again, from this campaign blog article of 11/5/2018, excerpting, quoting Steve Bannon, or not Steve Bannon, Christopher Wiley. Cambridge Analytica was a company spun out of SCL Group, a British military contractor that worked in information operations for armed forces around the world. It was conducting research on how to scale and digitize information warfare, the use of information to confuse or degrade the efficacy of an enemy. As director of research, Wiley's original role was to map out how the company would take traditional information operations tactics into the online space, in particular by profiling people who would be susceptible to certain messaging. This morphed into the political arena. After Wiley left, the company worked on Donald Trump's U.S. presidential campaign. It was this shift from the battlefield to politics that made Wiley uncomfortable. Quote, when you are working in information operations projects where your target is a combatant, the autonomy or agency of your targets is not your primary consideration. It is fair game to deny and manipulate information, coerce and exploit any mental vulnerabilities a person has, and to bring out the very worst characteristics in that person because they are an enemy, he says. But if you port that over to a democratic system, if you run campaigns designed to undermine people's ability to make free choices and to understand what is real and not real, you are undermining democracy and treating voters in the same way as you are treating terrorists. Still more. One of the reasons these techniques are so insidious is that being a target of a disinformation campaign is, quote, usually a pleasurable experience, unquote, because you are being fed content with which you are likely to agree, quote, you are being guided through something that you want to be true, unquote, Wiley says. To build an insurgency, he explains, you first target people who are more prone to having erratic traits, paranoia, or conspiratorial thinking, and get them to, quote, like, unquote, a group on social media. They start engaging with the content which may or not be true. Either way, it feels good to see that information, unquote. When the group reaches 1,000 or 2,000 members, an event is set up in the local area. Even if only 5% show up, that's 50 to 100 people flooding a local coffee shop, Wiley says. This, he adds, validates their opinion because other people there are also talking about, quote, all these things that you've been seeing online in the depths of your den and getting angry about, unquote. People then start to believe the reason it's not shown on mainstream news channels is because, quote, they don't want you to know what the truth is, unquote. As Wiley sums it up, what started out as a fantasy online gets ported into the temporal world and becomes real to you because you see all these people around you, unquote. And Facebook's role in this, and of course Facebook owns Instagram. Facebook has known about what Cambridge Analytica was up to from the very beginning of those projects, Wiley claims. They were notified, they authorized the applications, they were given the terms and conditions of the app that said explicitly what it was doing. They hired people who worked on building the app. I had legal correspondence with their lawyers where they acknowledged it happened as far back as 2016. I have a call to Cambridge Analytica and WikiLeaks hooked up with Palantir in this. Palantir, the alpha predator of the online surveillance and landscape. It was a Palantir employee in London working closely with the data scientists building Cambridge's psychological profiling technology who suggested the scientists create their own app, a mobile phone-based personality quiz to gain access to Facebook users' friends' networks, according to documents obtained by the New York Times. The revelations pulled Palantir, co-founded by the wealthy libertarian Peter Thiel, into the furor surrounding Cambridge, which improperly obtained Facebook data to build analytical tools it deployed on behalf of Donald J. Trump and other Republican candidates in 2016. Mr. Thiel, a supporter of President Trump, serves on the board at Facebook. Quote, there were senior Palantir employees that were also working on the Facebook data, said Christopher Wiley, a data expert and Cambridge Analytica co-founder, in testimony before British lawmakers on Tuesday. The connections between Palantir and Cambridge Analytica were thrust into the spotlight by Mr. Wiley's testimony on Tuesday. Both companies are linked to tech-driven billionaires who backed Mr. Trump's campaign. Cambridge is chiefly owned by Robert Mercer, the computer scientist and hedge fund magnate, while Palantir was co-founded in 2003 by Mr. Thiel, who was an initial investor in Facebook. And of the dark posts, one recent advertising product on Facebook is the so-called dark post, a news feed message seen by no one aside from the users being targeted. With the help of Cambridge Analytica, Mr. Trump's digital team used dark posts to serve different ads to different potential voters, aiming to push the exact right buttons for the exact right people at the exact right times. Well, in Hong Kong, you have basically what the late Milton Friedman described as the freest economy in the world. It is sort of the uber laissez-faire economy in the world. Over the last 10 years, they have had a 300% increase in rents, and the income has stagnated. It now has a 20% poverty rate, again, out of some 7 million people. It would not be difficult to target young Hong Kongers who have grown up with mobile technology and social media using something like the Cambridge Analytica SCL Palantir operation that we just spoke about. Again, in breaking down how Christopher Christopher Wiley broke down how building an insurgency could be done in the political realm, and how easy it is to do, and noting the disinformation campaign and how it feels good to be targeted by that, I don't think it is at all unfair. In fact, I think it is essential to be asking ourselves to what extent Steve Bannon, again, at the center of the Cambridge Analytica operation, coordinating the anti-China effort, and perhaps SCL, a counterinsurgency electronic company, a cyber war company, are involved with the activities in Hong Kong. Again, Hong Kong, a former British colony. And I would note, again, that Eddie Snowden decamped from Hawaii to Hong Kong. Hong Kong was his first stop, and he was basically escorted. His travels from Hawaii to Hong Kong were facilitated by Jacob Applebaum, the Broadcasting Board of Governors, the CIA-financed Ayn Rand acolyte, who was joined at the hip with Julian Assange. We looked at that in our series about Surveillance Valley. Then in Hong Kong, Sarah Harrison of WikiLeaks picked up Eddie Snowden and took him to Russia. That was the beginning of the new Cold War. I wonder what else maybe the friendly spook Snowden, the CIA, was doing in Hong Kong. As we have looked at in the past, the Snowden op and the WikiLeaks op are basically part of the same mega operation. In for the record, program number 725, and I will have this, a link to this, in the written description for the program. We accessed information that was disclosed by John Young. He was one of the original founders of WikiLeaks and then broke with them because he felt basically they were acting like a bunch of spooks. They were acting like a bunch of, like a cult, like a religion. John Young, one of the founders of WikiLeaks, became one of their fiercest critics. And John Young had some interesting things to leak here about WikiLeaks, including some of their emails. Young's WikiLeaks emails indicate that dissident exiles from China and Russia helped and elsewhere founded the group. Some of the notes here from the WikiLeaks emails. One, WikiLeaks was founded by Chinese dissidents, mathematicians, and startup company technologists from the U.S., Taiwan, Europe, Australia, and South Africa. Our advisory board, which is still forming, includes representatives from expatriate Russian and Tibetan refugee communities, reporters, a former U.S. intelligence analyst, and cryptographers. And one of the last sentences here. We are going to F blank, blank, blank them all. Chinese, mostly, but not entirely, a feint. Invention abounds. Lies, twists, and distorts everywhere needed for protection. Hackers monitor Chinese and other intel as they burrow into their targets. And when they pull, so do we. So again, the role of Eddie Snowden, the role of Cambridge Analytica, perhaps, or SCL, or Steve Bannon in what is going on in Hong Kong, is very much to be considered. And in particular, I think the Cambridge Analytica methodology and what we're seeing in Hong Kong really needs to be very carefully scrutinized. I would note that there was an alarmist note sounded on the editorial page of the New York Times of Tuesday, December 10th. This is an op-ed co-authored by John Kerry, former vice president and secretary of state, and Ro Khanna, called Our Green Energy Challenge. And this will be something of a link to our next show. We should pledge that by the end of the next decade, America will surpass China and win the clean energy race. We aren't winning that race today, and in many ways, we aren't even trying. China is becoming an energy superpower. Earlier this year, the Global Commission on the Geopolitics of Energy Transformation reported that China became the world's largest producer, exporter, and installer of solar panels, wind turbines, batteries, and electric vehicles, followed by Japan and Germany. The U.S. ranks fourth. China surpassed us for the lead in renewable energy technology, too, with 150,000 patents, making up to 30% of the world's totals. We are second with just over 100,000 patents, while Japan and the European Union follow with about 75,000 each. In 2015, China surpassed us to become the largest electric vehicle market and is on pace to dominate production for the next 20 years. Chinese electric vehicles account for 60% of global sales. 876,000 vehicles were produced last year, compared with 361,000 in America. Again, Chinese electric vehicles account for 60% of global sales. 876,000 vehicles were produced last year, compared with 361,000 in the U.S. China is doing things we are afraid to do. They offer citizens large subsidies for purchasing electric vehicles from state-owned companies. Municipalities waive fees for electric vehicle owners. The city of Shenzhen, which has a population of 12.5 million people, runs 100% electric vehicle bus fleet and is, by fiat, converting 22,000 taxis to electric vehicles. High-speed rail also is integral to China's strategy. It has the largest high-speed railway in the world with 19,000 miles of track and most major cities connected by the network. The U.S. has less than 500 miles. Our fastest train takes 19 to 22 hours from New York to Chicago, whereas the same distance in China takes 4.5 hours. Well, we'll come back to this in the big way. This, in short, is a good thing and a necessary thing. And instead of deploring this, we ought to be not only helping the Chinese, we should be doing the best we can to compete with them, which we certainly have at least the capability of doing. But instead, it's like, oh, my God, look at the Chinese. In particular, note the Chinese focus on electric vehicles. On the other hand, look at what we're doing at the rate things are going. In 50 years, Pepe the Frog and other aquatic creatures will be the only people that are enjoying life in Hong Kong. This concludes For the Record program number 1103, Fascism 2019 World Tour Part 13, Goose Hopping in Hong Kong with Pepe the Frog and the Azov Battalion. This is being recorded on December 10th of 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.